What's up, everybody? Welcome back, or welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. My producer's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We broadcast all across the state of Wisconsin, but the easiest way to listen is to go get the app from your favorite app store. It's free. Tell all your friends about it. You know, we try to learn together here on the network, and I certainly have a great partner in doing so today, my special co-host and guest, Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics, a Navy veteran, a small business owner, and a two-time candidate for Congress. We're certainly seeing the needle move, and I'll just say this, Tom, because I wanted to get it on the radio. We were talking about the primary results and how the voting has changed, and especially Waukesha and Ozaukee County. I want to say this to you. You helped move the needle and start moving the needle before that district's boundaries were changed. So I want to personally say thank you to Tom for understanding that there wasn't a red wall and that there were people that were reachable in Waukesha and Ozaukee counties. I think you helped set the stage, and you certainly helped start to chip away at those incorrect assumptions about what our elections can look like and what really motivates people to get involved, which is good solutions that work for everybody and reasonable people who treat each other with respect and kindness. So my personal thanks to you, Tom. You helped start all of this. So thank you, Tom.
I appreciate it. And I will say that there are a lot of people who jumped in to help.
Yes.
And are still doing the hard work today. So kudos to all the county parties and all the people who basically just show up every weekend to canvas and do what they need to do.
Yeah, it's amazing. A ton of door knocking going on. And listen, there's going to be fundraising challenges, folks. You're going to get solicitations. I just got one. I thought this was really interesting from Sherrod Brown in Ohio. Apparently, the McConnell-controlled fund, right, for Republican senatorial candidates has just placed on reserve the largest ad buy in the history of Ohio, meaning they've said, we're going to buy all of these ads, and it's an overwhelming amount. That's an example of, I think, Republicans may be starting to refocus some of their efforts, I don't know, some of the money, into trying to gain control of the Senate or maintain control of the House. So to your point, Tom, I think it's going to be up to everybody, not just from a donation perspective, but listen, campaigns need money. And so if you've got that possibility, I think that that's up to each individual to consider whether that's a way to express your values. But giving money ain't all it is, right? There's the canvassing, there's the folks that phone call, there's the volunteers. It's talking to people that you love and care about with kindness and openness, but also yes, with an intolerance for the baloney. And I think one of the critical topics that we need to do that about is the economy. But I promised everybody that before we would talk economics, I wanted to take a listen to what Governor Walz had said about the controversy and some of the criticisms his opponent, J.D. Vance, had said about him. This is the way you have these discussions, folks. Let's take a listen. This is Governor Walz in response to some of these criticisms just this week.
With my dad's encouragement, a guy who served in the Army during the Korean War, I signed up for the Army National Guard 2 days after my 17th birthday. I served for the next 24 years for the same reason all my brothers and sisters in uniform do. We love this country. I'm going to say it again as clearly as I can. I am damn proud of my service to this country. And I firmly believe you should never denigrate another person's service record. To anyone brave enough to put on that uniform for our great country, including my opponent, I just have a few simple words. Thank you for your service and sacrifice.
Yeah, folks, that's the way it's done, with some class and character.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about the economy, Tom. I was asked yesterday to give some comments to a couple of outlets about inflation and what might be different in a Harris administration. different versus the Biden administration's policies, different versus what a potential Trump administration might bring. And I just want to say this to sort of set this up, and then I want to get your take on it, Tom. I am an economist. Some of the proposals from Trump are so stupid that any economist, anyone who has spent even the smallest amount of time legitimately studying how to encourage economic growth, how to raise wages, how to build a robust middle class, which is what Trump says he cares about.
Yes.
His proposals will do exactly the opposite. And I'm speaking specific, there's a whole gamut of them. But there are three things in particular that are stupid, stupid, stupid. And they are, in no particular order, this idea that across the board, crippling tariffs on imports would somehow be good for our economy. All that is red meat garbage bait for folks that may feel disaffected or left behind by the economy. That will not help you. It will not help your family. A tariff is a tax. And middle-class families spend the vast majority of their incomes on consumable goods. And
yes,
that kind of tariff approach, those protectionist policies, will make everything that you buy, everything, much more expensive. Think every time Donald Trump says, let's put a 10% tariff on all imports and a 60% tariff on goods from China, just assume that you're going to write a check to the federal government, not the federal government, but an additional check for everything that you buy, ranging somewhere between like $2,000 to $5,000 a year. That's how it's going to show up in your household budget. So that's thing one that's stupid, stupid, stupid.
Did it work? Anyone know the effects? It did not work.
Yeah. And the second stupid thing is more tax cuts for billionaires and the richest corporations. Stupid, stupid, stupid. It doesn't work. Those tax cuts basically got paid out to the wealthiest of the wealthiest in the form of additional stock buybacks and dividends. In other words, so the tax that the richest corporations didn't have to pay, did that ever get down to you? Did they invest more in job training and building more manufacturing plants? No, they didn't. They just paid off their investors. By the way, very few of us own substantial amounts of stock. If you're like, well, I have a 401k plan, that's not you. Okay? Right. The third stupid, stupid, stupid thing is the idea that the Fed shouldn't be independent and that the president should tell the Fed what to do with interest rates. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Literally, the first time you study basically like institutional economics, in other words, what are the institutions that are required for democratic and capitalistic societies to function well? The first thing that you're told is you have to have an independent central bank. You don't want short-sighted politicians deciding what to do with interest rates or other monetary and fiscal policies. It's just
whoever
stupid.
Says that is a stupid idiot.
Yes. So I was wondering, Tom, what would you like to say about these things? Because I am terrified of a Trump presidency because I believe in our economy. I believe in businesses. I believe in business growth. But that has to be done in a way that actually results in higher wages and incomes for middle-class families.
Yep. Yeah. And I'll go through each one at a time. You know, the tariffs to me is they're basically running on a national sales tax.
Yep.
But they're not calling it a national sales tax. They're going to call it tariffs. And he says there'll be some magical thing that this money will flow back to the people who are irreparably harmed by it. But no, that's not going to happen. You know, the tax cuts, you know, at this point, would you be surprised if a Republican didn't run on tax cuts? Because that is the one thing that they continue to run on. But here's the thing about tax cuts, and I think this is a danger to both parties at this point, is we are not focusing enough on the debt and the deficit. At some point, we're going to have to start actually doing something about those two, which means not tax cuts, but tax increases like President Biden's already talking about. And if we don't start actively doing those things, we're going to have a lot more pain in the future. The one you hit on, though, that's the dangerous one is the Fed. To me, that's the one that when I take a step back and go, wait a minute, there's a reason and there's a purpose that that institution has to be separated from the politics. But you, I mean, you've heard Trump say this, that he's smarter than the Fed anyways, and why would he not be in charge of rates to begin with, right? Because everybody knows that
stupid people.
Yes. So bottom line, though, that's the one that disturbs me the most. But here's the thing. You know, the president doesn't have much impact when it comes to inflation, you know, and most people, if you read enough, know that the inflation, this last burst of inflation came from our economy and completely shifting gears between the service sector and the goods sector. And it came down to shipping containers at the end of the day, because stuff couldn't get shipped on a timely basis while we were all in the pandemic buying stuff instead of going out and doing whatever it is we need to do. I think one of the things that President Biden did immediately was get a handle on what was causing the shipping container fiasco and started actively working to ease it. And that is why inflation started coming down, at least on the good side. And once inflation gets out, it starts to spread to all different sectors. But the interesting thing is now inflation is below 3%.
And yeah, which is where you want, that's the target. Target is,
well, targeted inflation is like 2.25. But I've always wondered, like, where does 2 come from?
It's really like 2.25, 2.5, right. And we're under 3 right now. So, like, we're in range.
Right. And we could be China, where we actually had disinflation or deflation. You know, they've had, I think, 13 months in a row of lowering home prices. Do you imagine the consternation in this country where it'd be right now if home prices were dropping for 13 straight months?
Yeah, meaning your home, the value of your home, the single biggest asset that most middle class people ever own, was losing value.
But here's the other thing, and I think this is the most important thing, is we are about to have a soft landing, which has only happened in theory. Right. It has never happened in practice. Yeah. And it is about to happen, and it's currently happening right now. And a soft landing is when we don't have a rise in unemployment and we have a drop in inflation. Because Maggie, you're old enough to remember stagflation, right?
Oh, yes. I mean,
how crazy was that with 10% interest rates and 10% inflation? Crazy stuff. But right now, and you know, the bottom line is, the way I think about it is, as long as people are employed and prices continue, the rate of increase of prices continue to drop, people will feel better about the economy and do what they just did, according to the retail sales report that came out today, is spend money to keep the economy going.
Yeah,
and tax cuts for the rich don't help the economy at all. 70% of the economy is driven by consumer spending, and consumers still feel confident about the economy.
Yeah, that's the key. You're trying to strike a balance. We're going to ask one of my favorite callers, CJ. CJ, should the Federal Reserve be independent? Should a president be able to set interest rates?
No, he shouldn't.
Great. We've got one. CJ and I agree. A president should not be able to set interest rates. I love it. Thanks so much, CJ. That is wonderful. That is awesome. Wonderful. We had a moment of agreement on something. CJ, what else did you want to say, sir?
He's not proposing that. He's saying he should have input on it. But here's the thing.
What is input mean? Like, why change any of it? Like, the president has input on it now. He meets with the Federal Reserve chair and the heads of each of the Federal Reserve banks across the country. There's input now. So what exactly does he mean when he says, I would be better at setting interest rates than the Fed?
I'd like to respond to your guest about inflation, because...
Well, my guest isn't asking you the question. I am. What does he mean? What does Trump mean when he says input? Because a president has input now.
You always give everybody else free rein to talk.
CJ, you forget about the rules. There's 3 rules. You must answer the questions that are asked of you. You cannot lie, and you cannot, you know, dog whistle things. It's because I'm trying to get to places where we can find some overlap, CJ. I want us to confront the facts. So yes, my friend, you get a little cross-examined on the show. It's my privilege. I get to do that. But I always like it when you call, CJ. You take care. We're going to take care of some business ourselves, and I'll be back with one of the most reasonable men in politics, Tom Paulswitz. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's no better word than stupid.
Y'all so stupid!